This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by iTelescope.net, expanding your horizons in astronomy today, the premier on-demand telescope network at dark sky sites in Spain, New Mexico, and Sliding Spring, Australia.
It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the Moon, on the Moon, and from the Moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. Even though the late heavy bombardment is somewhat of a controversial idea, some new research has revealed this period of impacts to the Earth-Moon system may have lasted much longer than originally estimated. Here to tell us more is Dr. Barbara Cohen, who's the lead planetary scientist at Marshall Space Flight Center, and she also helps out with robotic mission planning for NASA's Science and Human Exploration Directorate. Hi, Barbara, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Nancy.
First of all, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of the late heavy bombardment, could you explain exactly what that is?
Sure. The late heavy bombardment, as it's sometimes called, also goes by the name the lunar cataclysm. And that was actually its original name. It's a concept that came to us in the 1970s when we brought the first Apollo samples back and analyzed them for their isotopes. And what their isotopes tell us is the formation age of the rocks. So we're very interested in when the rocks on the moon formed. That tells us when the geologic processes were happening. So we got the ages of the original lunar crust. We got the ages of some of the basaltic products that tell us when the lava was flowing on the moon. And we also got ages of impact melt rocks. And those tell us when craters were forming on the moon. And particularly large craters have a big footprint, create a lot of impact melt, and go on to reset isotopes or change the isotopic composition of their rocks. So when people started looking at these impact rocks, rocks that were affected by impact, and looking at their ages, they noticed that many of them, if not all of them, seem to have been reset around 3.9 billion years ago, 4 billion years ago, something like that. And for something to have reset all of those rocks all over the whole moon at one single time was a very unusual result. We know there's a lot of craters all over the face of the moon, and we had sort of just assumed that they happen all throughout time, and so the ages of the impact melt rocks should span all throughout lunar history. But for them to cluster up like this and to show really this 3.9 age over and over and over again means there was something happening on the moon. The explanation was that there were a lot of craters being created on the moon at one time, which led to the concept of this lunar cataclysm, a huge number of bombarding impactors coming to the moon at the same time in lunar history at around 3.9 billion years. That concept has been expanded to encompass the inner solar system. And that's because the Earth and the moon behave sort of as one system for something coming in to bombard the moon. It has an equal chance of hitting the moon or the Earth. Actually, it has a little bit better chance of hitting the Earth because it's bigger and has a larger gravity pull. And there's really no way to explain bombardment just hitting the moon. It probably had to hit the Earth, and it probably had to affect the whole inner solar system. So the late heavy bombardment is this concept that some 500 million years after solar system formation, the solar system has settled down into what we think of as its current configuration. There's not a lot of debris floating around to cause a great number of impacts. And then something changed. Something changed such that there was a period of intense bombardment in the inner solar system and possibly throughout the whole solar system that's come to be known as this late heavy bombardment.
And, well, two recent papers came out that were pretty interesting in the journal Nature that discussed a possible extension to the time period of the late heavy bombardment, and they found that out from looking at some evidence from Earth. Could you tell us about, perhaps talk about the first paper by Bill Bodke and his team at the Southwest Research Institute?
Sure. Well, Bill is the head of the Center for Lunar Origin and Exploration, or CLOE, which is an NLSI institute, and I'm a collaborator in his CLOE institute. And something that we've been throwing back and forth for a couple years is related to his interest in dynamics of the solar system and my interest in sample science and what the samples tell us about the bombardment history. So some of the work that I did some years ago looked at lunar meteorites, and the ages, the impact ages in lunar meteorites seem to not They didn't go back beyond 4 billion years, but yet they extended down to about 3.5 billion years. And so they seem to span a larger range than the Apollo samples. And we started thinking, well, maybe this lunar cataclysm or this late heavy bombardment, maybe it wasn't a single spike, or if it was, maybe it extended to a longer period of time, and how would that work? And then his collaborators at Southwest Research Institute came up with this idea of the giant planets migrating around that time in solar system history. If the giant planets migrate, they send resonances through the asteroid belt, destabilize populations of the asteroid belt, send those asteroids colliding into the inner solar system. That's called the NEAS model. Now, after that came out, Bill got interested in spheral layers, which are evidence of large impacts on the Earth. Now, with the Earth, it's a lot harder to find evidence of ancient impacts because we have plate tectonics, we have erosion, we have wind, we have water. You know, only 25% of our surface is covered with land to even preserve impacts, and so little of that is ancient. So looking for ancient impacts on the Earth is a tricky business. But in the last decade or so, people have been finding these spheral layers. Now, spherules come out of large impacts. They're kind of like a microtectite, if you will. They're material that's been created in the impact and then thrown up and coats a layer over the Earth. And then they get lithified, and we can preserve them in rocks, and then we can go back and see these as evidence of ancient impacts, even when we can't find the original crater. And we can date those and say, okay, well, the spherules formed at X time, therefore a large crater must have formed at that same time. Now, those spheral layers are shown to exist even younger than what we see in the lunar impact. So most of the Apollo samples are about 3.9 billion years old. The lunar meteorites take it down to maybe 3.5 billion years old. And some of those spheral layers can get very young, down into sort of the 2.5 billion year range. So what Bill Bodke proposed in his paper is that the asteroid belt originally extended to closer to the sun than it does now. Right now, the inner edge of the asteroid belt is limited by a resonance. Well, if the giant planets, a Jupiter resonance, if the giant planets were in a different configuration and then changed, then that resonance wouldn't have been where it is now. It might have been closer to the sun. So he populated that original resonance with asteroids and then said, okay, now let's destabilize the planets and see what happens. And then it turns out you get a nice big flux of impactors coming in from what he calls that E-belt, or an extension of the asteroid belt. And the characteristics of that population are such that they match some of our characteristics of the lunar bombardment. And those dregs can hang around long enough to also impact the Earth all the way into the Archean, or 2.5 billion years ago. And additionally, the population that he sees there is roughly what would cause the number of spheral layers on the Earth. So it's only an order of magnitude calculation. It's not exact, but at least it's consistent. He doesn't see hundreds of times more impacts or hundreds of times less impacts than what we actually observe on the Earth today. And so that gives some credence to his model for explaining not only what we observe on the moon, but what we observe on the Earth as well.
Okay. Well, there was another paper, too, that came out at the same week, led by Johnson and Malash et al., and they had similar findings on the spheral layers, but they kind of came up with a different idea of where the asteroids may have come from. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. So the Johnson and Melosh paper came out at the same time, as you said, and it's very interesting. They looked at the spheral layers as well, and they have a similar impetus. They want to know what made those craters on the Earth at that time, and were they related to, say, the late heavy bombardment or something else. So what they did is they looked at the size of the individual spherules and the thickness of the spheral layers. And those measurements, they can relate to the original crater size. And they can do that by using craters that we can observe today and their spheral layers to make an empirical relationship that then you can apply to ancient craters where the crater is gone but the spheral layer persists. So the size of the spherules themselves and the thickness relate to the size of the original impact crater. And we know from scaling laws that have been developed previously, we can relate the size of the crater to the impact velocity, and the size of the spherules actually relates to the impact velocity, and the thickness of the spheral layer relates to the impactor size. So knowing the impactor size and knowing the impactor velocity, we can get a size frequency distribution, which is what we use to compare to populations of impactors, say the main belt asteroids or the near Earth asteroids or comets or what have you that are impacting specific bodies. Then Johnson-Melosh relationship that they came up with says that the spheral layers match a size frequency distribution that looks like the near Earth asteroids today. And that's a very different distribution than the main belt asteroids or even an E-belt asteroid size frequency distribution. So they say that the velocities that the impactors were coming into at least the Earth system to make these spheral layers is pretty comparable to what we're being hit with today from the near-Earth asteroid belt, and the size distribution also matches the near-Earth asteroid belt. So they're proposing for the spheral layers a different origin, not one that's related to the late heavy bombardment, but one that's more akin to what bombardment population is today, although at greater frequency. So there were more craters being created, even if it was the same population as what's hitting us today.
Well, it's interesting to see how they can kind of combine computer models with science that they're, you know, finding on the Earth to find out more about our solar system.
Absolutely. That's one of the great things about the NLSI in particular. It's been able to bring modelers and sample scientists together to give the different constraints and work the problems that way.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for talking with us about this. And hopefully we'll hear more about this as we find out more about the history of our solar system.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy was sponsored anonymously and dedicated to the International Dark Sky Association. www.darksky.org.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.